The Story of Big Tom, Chapter 2. "Bobby Dobson," said Mom, "you take your gas mask with you."
"But we're only going to the sweet shop," said Bobby.
The sweet shop wasn't even 5 minutes away. It was just three doors up on the corner of Scarlet Street, where the Dobsons lived, and Station Road. What did Mom think was going to happen between here and the sweet shop?
"I don't care where you're going," said Mom. "You take that gas mask."
Bobby screwed his face into a hideous gargoyle expression. He tramped back into the hall and picked up the gas mask in its cardboard case. Jenny already had hers, of course. Jenny always did what she was told. She never went anywhere without her gas mask.
"It's just stupid," grumbled Bobby as they walked down the path. "If the alarm went, we'd have bags of time to get back."
He meant if the alarm went for a gas attack. So far, it hadn't happened. All Bobby had ever used his gas mask for was frightening Jenny. He had put it on one night and crept into her bedroom, making ghostly noises. It had been the best fun of the war so far.
"Stands to reason," he muttered. "Not going to hang around in the street, are we?"
"Doesn't make any difference," said Jenny. "You have to have it with you at all times." Bobby pulled another gargoyle face. Why was his sister such a goody-goody? Because she was his sister, he supposed.
"Nothing's going to happen," he said. "Nothing's ever going to happen."
The war was proving a great disappointment to Bobby. It had been going on for months, and life was hardly any different from how it had been before. Well, not in any exciting sort of way. Schools had closed for a short time, but they had very quickly opened again. Some children from the East End had been sent into the country for fear of bombs, but then, when there weren't any, they had all been sent back. Barrage balloons had gone up, and that had been quite interesting for a while. Bobby had had high hopes of barrage balloons, but barrage balloons didn't exactly do anything. They didn't fly around. They didn't have guns. They didn't even burst or blow up. All they did was just hang about in the sky. The blackout had been fun too, just at first, before people had grown used to it. They had all gone blundering about in the pitch dark, warting into gateposts and stubbing their toes on the curb and going, "Ow!" and "Ouch!" and "What the blazes?" Dad had said the blackout was more of a menace than Hitler. Certainly Hitler didn't seem to be doing very much. Leastways not in this country, not as far as Bobby could see. Not a single German airman had been parachuting out of the skies. Not a single Messerschmitt had nosedived into the back garden. Not a single air raid had taken place. What was Hitler up to? He was either fighting a war or he wasn't. Bobby said this to his sister, and she looked at him reproachfully. "Anyone would think you wanted horrid things to happen."
"Well, not horrid things. Exciting things."
They reached the sweet shop, and the bell tinkled as they opened the door. Mrs. Beams sat behind the counter. Mrs. Beams was like her name. She beamed. Mrs. Beams was always beaming. She was plump and cosy, with a big soft cushion, and all the children loved her. On top of the counter, in a warm, fat heap, sat Big Tom. Big Tom was Mrs. Beams' cat. He was rather like Mrs. Beams, plump and soft and cosy. All the children loved him too. Bobby loved him best of all.
"Big Tom!" he cried.
And he wrapped his arms round him and rubbed his cheek against Big Tom's fur. Big Tom purred loudly. He was an exceedingly handsome cat, glossy black with four white socks,
a white tip to his tail and white patches on his face. Bobby was his favourite of all the children who came into the shop.
"I wish Mum and Dad would let me have a cat," said Bobby.
"Dear me then, poor Tom would be so jealous," said Mrs. Beams.
"Well, I'd still come and talk to him."
"Ah, but it wouldn't be the same. He'd know.
Anyway, you can't have one while the war's on," said Jenny. "It wouldn't be fair. What would it do if the Germans came and dropped bombs?"
"They're not going to drop bombs."
Bobby sounded resentful. "They'd have done it by now if they were going to."
"I wouldn't be so sure about that," said Mrs. Beams. "I reckon they're just biding their time. How's your Derek getting on?"
"Derek's in France." Jenny couldn't help a note of importance entering her voice. All the family were proud of Derek. "He's with the Expeditionary Force, like my George."
But Mrs. Beams' George was only a private. Derek had a stripe on his sleeve. He was a corporal. That was because Derek had volunteered. George had waited to be called up.
"Doing a good job out there, those lads," Mrs. Beams nodded. "They'll have Jerry on the run in no time."
When Mrs. Beams said Jerry, she meant the Germans. Bobby heaved a sigh. He scooped Big Tom into his arms and cradled him glumly.
"War'll be over before we've even had a chance."
"Well, and what are we supposed to make of that?" said Mrs. Grimes.
"He wants horrible things to happen," Jenny said. "He wants bombs and air raids and planes shooting at each other."
"It's wartime," roared Bobby. "That's what happens in wartime."
Mrs. Beam shook her head. "I just hope you don't have your way, young man. Now, what can I do for you both?"
Two ounces of jelly babies, please." Jenny opened her purse. "And the Daily Mirror paper for Mum."
"I'll have licorice all sorts," said Bobby.
"Please," prompted Jenny.
"Please. And 2 pennies worth of gobstoppers."
"Gobstoppers to stop your gabble." Mrs. Beams reached for the jar. "Stop all that nasty talk of bombs and air raids."
"It won't happen, will it?"
Jenny looked at Mrs. Beams trustfully. "If we drive the Germans out of France," she hesitated, "we will drive them out of France, won't we?"
"Lord love you, of course we will," said Mrs. Beams. "What with your Derek out there and my George, them Jerrys, they'll go running."
"I told you so," said Bobby glumly as they left the shop. "It'll all be over."
But Bobby was wrong, and so was Mrs. Beams. The Germans didn't go running. It was the British and their allies who had to run. Thousands of troops were evacuated from the beach at a place called Dunkirk that Bobby had never heard of before. Fleets of boats, big boats, little boats, barges, dinghies, anything that would float, crossed the English Channel to help in their rescue. And not everyone came home. George Beams was one of the lucky ones. He made it back. He was wounded, but his wounds were not too serious. Mrs. Beams went down to Kent to visit him in hospital, leaving Big Tom with Bobby. And Bobby was enchanted.
"I do wish I had a cat of my own," he said.
"Bobby, please don't start that again," said Mom. "This is not the time."
Bobby was hurt. All he'd done was say that he wished he had a cat.
"You are just so insensitive," hissed Elaine. "All you ever think of is yourself. You know Mum's worried, silly, about Derek."
Derek was one of the ones who hadn't come back. No one knew where he was or what had happened to him.
I forgot," mumbled Bobby. Elaine rolled her eyes.
"You see, You see what I mean? You're such a selfish little toad.
He didn't mean to be selfish, but you couldn't worry all of the time. And Derek was bound to come home. George Beams had come home, and he was only a private.
Derek was probably still on his way. His boat had probably broken down or stopped in the wrong place. It had probably gone to Ireland or somewhere else. He said this to Elaine, and she looked at him with distaste, as if he were some kind of particularly repellent insect.
"Maybe you'll grow out of it," she said.
"Out of what?"
"Your present personality," snarled Elaine. Bobby went to sit on top of the Anderson with Big Tom. There was something very strange about girls. They certainly weren't the same as boys. In the House of Commons, Mr. Winston Churchill, who was now the Prime Minister, made a stirring speech.
"We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender."
"Chin up, Lovey," said Mrs. Beams when she came to collect Big Tom. She put an arm round Tom's shoulders.
"My George says there was so much confusion on that beach, no one hardly knew what was going on. Your Derek'll turn up safe and sound. You'll see."
Mum smiled and tried to be brave, but the newspapers were full of scare stories.
"Germany set to invade Britain. German invasion imminent."
"What's imminent mean?" said Bobby.
Jenny wasn't sure. "I think it means it could happen any day."
"Caw."
Bobby was impressed.
An invasion, that was something he hadn't thought of. Pictures appeared of railway stations with the names painted out, and of beaches covered with barbed wire. Bobby and his best friend Stanley dreamed of what they would do if they came across an invading German.
"What would you do?" said Elaine scornfully.
"We'd trail him."
"And then what?"
"Then we'd corner him and go for the police.
"Huh," said Elaine.
"A likely tale." She was just scared, of course. It sometimes seemed to Bobby that everyone was scared, except him. And Stanley Blackshaw as well. And Dad. Nothing frightened Dad, but even Dad didn't have plans for catching German invaders. In July, the Battle of Britain began, the great struggle between the RAF and the German Luftwaffe. What Bobby wouldn't have given to be a Spitfire pilot. He and Stanley Blackshaw watched the planes going over, wave upon wave of them. They even saw the occasional dogfight up above them, high in the clouds. They played Battle of Britain games in the back garden, taking it in turns to be Spitfires and Messerschmitts. They looked for bits of shrapnel and kept a watch for German pilots dangling at the end of parachutes that had bailed out.
"I suppose you're enjoying all this," said Elaine.
Bobby regarded her sternly.
"I'm not enjoying it. I'm practicing."
"For what?"
"For when I find a German pilot."
"Oh, for heaven's sake," said Elaine. "Haven't you got anything better to do?" It was all very well for Elaine. She had left school and was working. She was in a factory making parts for aircraft. She was doing her bit for the war effort. Bobby wasn't doing anything. Mum said he could help best by being good and behaving himself. But what use was that? He wanted to feel that he was part of things. And then, at the beginning of September, they all became part of things. The siren sounded, Moaning Minnie, as people called it. And this time, it was for real. The bombs showered down upon London.